Hey there, listener, and welcome to episode number 86 of the National Land Realty Podcast, where we discuss all things land. Our goal here is to inform, educate, and entertain those of you who own land or are interested in the buying and selling of land throughout the United States. My name is Mac Christian, and I am the Chief Marketing Officer here at National Land Realty. I'll be your host for this episode. Now, before we jump in today, you will notice a little bit of a difference in my appearance if you're watching the video. I did manage to shave for the first time in 3 years. So if you don't recognize me, it's still me. I'm still here. And I don't think that there's been a Samson-type thing go on. I still think I have my my podcasting powers. Shaving has not eliminated that from my skill set. So we're going to jump in. Today, we're talking about wetlands assessments and remediation. These are things that most landowners don't think about until it's too late. Sometimes you think about it right when you pick up a piece of land. You might go through a wetlands assessment. Maybe you didn't pay attention to what it was or the fact that it had already gone on, or maybe you didn't even consider the fact that you might need to do one. Again, it's something that a lot of people don't think about until it's too late. And by then it can get very, very, very expensive. So we're here today to talk with Kurt Kleist. He is the CEO of CK Wetlands. And I'm going to read my notes here because his firm does a lot of things. CK Wetlands assists with wetlands assessment, delineation, permit applications, GIS services, monitoring and mitigations of wetlands, as well as tree inventories. Kurt is here today to talk with us about the risks of not knowing if you have wetlands on your land, as well as how to avoid some of the pitfalls of not knowing. Now, this is something that every landowner should know about. Sit back and enjoy. All right, so I am sitting here talking to Kurt Kleist. He is CEO of CK Wetlands out of Minnesota. And Kurt, I just wanted you to give me a little bit of background. How did you start CK Wetlands? And you know, as the big boss there, what do you do?
Well, thanks for having me on today. I have my own company, CK Wetlands. I kind of started out, when I was younger, grew up in northern Minnesota by the Boundary Waters. Dad was a natural resource, water resource professor up at Vermilion College. And kind of from there, I just always grew up canoeing, hunting, hiking, kind of always had a love for the outdoors. So from there, went to University of North Dakota, got my Bachelor of Science in Fish and Wildlife Biology, went there after college, did a lot of waterfall research, seasonal jobs around the country, was kind of into that waterfall research route, and then kind of got offered a consulting job up in northern Minnesota, so kind of started there, and then kind of moved around at a few different firms, got a lot of experience doing different things, and then got into wetlands, and just kind of figured I could do this on my own. So kind of started my own network with clients, and just been with my own company for probably about 6-7 years now, and just getting busier every year, and things been going well. So yeah.
And you were located, I want to say Chisholm, Minnesota, but that's probably, is it Chisholm? How's this?
Chisholm. No, Chisholm? Yeah, right. Yep. So okay. Chisholm, yeah. So it's So it's on the Iron Range. That's kind of where I'm based out of, and it's a pretty good general location. And you know, we do projects primarily all over the Midwest, primarily Minnesota, but really, I mean, I've done wetland work in probably half the states. So I've kind of been all over doing projects, kind of wherever, you know, depending on the project size and wherever the work takes me. So kind of up in Iron Range, northern Minnesota. That's kind of where we're based out of. So,
okay. And so you move from waterfowl research and field research into wetlands, just wetlands work in general. What took you there, and like, how did you end up specifying in wetlands? And then we can kind of jump into what you work with in particular. And then, because obviously we were talking before, and we're going to take the conversation into what landowners should look for or be concerned with and what they can fix and what they can't. But I wanted you to take me into, how do you go from the sort of the biology field research side to wetlands mitigation and work?
Yeah, so I was, I was doing a lot of waterfall research down in the Gulf Coast, Louisiana, Florida, Nevada, Illinois, North Dakota, Minnesota, kind of all over. And a lot of those waterfall research jobs are kind of that summer seasonal job. And I was kind of between jobs, and I kind of had a friend of my dad offer me a position with kind of back home, in Iron Range, and it was kind of a good timing. And I was like, oh, this is. Looks like I never even knew what a wetland delineation was or any of that. So that's kind of how I got kind of groomed into it. And I got out as just a field assistant on some mining projects with older gentleman, and kind of got me groomed in and training me in. And then, kind of just took it from there and moved around with a few different engineering firms, consulting firms, small, large, and then just kind of took it from there on my own. So if you like doing what you're doing, and figured it's kind of easy enough, and if you really have a dedication, a passion for the field, you can really make it happen. So
So you ended up landing with a mentor, and I like to joke and call it the graybeard discount. It's like if you listen, you can get 30 years of experience from in just a short amount of time. Finding good mentorship is key.
That's really the key. I've been doing now a lot of with a field assistance on some prior employment jobs I had and stuff. But yeah, when you get out really with you can do all the whether wetland training or in classroom, and but it's really that out in the field where you're looking at the soil, looking at the plants, the hands-on learning is, I mean, you can take a years of class and one field season doing that, so you can really take it all in and really learn from some of the best and kind of their aspect and how they do things. And I never do things the same, and you take a little bit from your whole route on life and take a little bit in and kind of shape things kind of how you want to, whether data collection or reports or GIS or anything. So
Gotcha.
but yeah.
So, CK Wetlands, how long have you been established?
About 2018. So yeah. 5, 6 years now.
Yeah, you're breaking
So,
that mark. You're getting to that
yeah.
stage where, what is it? Most companies don't make it past their 5-year mark kind of thing. Like you're established now.
So, but yeah, I've been about 5 years kind of full time, and was kind of doing part time a little bit before that. But yeah, it's been just busier and busier than ever. So it's been going excellent, really good.
So tell me a little bit about CK Wetlands, and from this, if somebody's listening, then this is probably going to be pretty typical of a wetlands research firm that somebody would be working with, and in particular yours. Tell me just sort of like what you do for clients and sort of your service offerings.
Yeah, so when people are looking at properties, whether it's a realtor, developer, pretty private person, if they're looking at properties, and there's environmental issues or wetlands out there or wildlife issues or just general site feasibility development, they could contact me. So we do wetland delineations as our primary aspect. Do assessments like initial desktop reviews. We also do some forestry inventories, just general like site planning and development out there. So, yeah, in essence, like a delineation is, we go out and do a legal boundary, look at the soils, the vegetation, and the hydrology, and really find that line between the wetland boundary and the upland, which we use there's an 87 Army Corps of Engineer manual that kind of determines our methodology for sampling, data collection, report, and regulatory review. So yeah, people, I mean, if realtors are people are looking at a property, don't know what's out there, I can usually do a initial like site view, whether you're, I mean, anywhere in the country, we have GIS layers that are out there that you can look and say, really look at and get a pretty good ballpark approximate of if there's wetlands out there, the likelihood. I mean, like there's some areas where, I'm not really, sh I don't really think there's any wetlands out there, but you really aren't going to know unless you're in the field. But, there's some areas where you can see it on the aerial imagery. You got, open water or drowned out crop. You can see, well, there's probably wetlands out there. So, and every site's a little different, kind of varies, but those are kind of some of the things that we'll look for.
Is it a process of, so when you're looking at GIS layer, like you're looking at, you know, where water tables are, what the elevation of that area is, types of soil composition, that kind of thing. When you're going about this process, does GIS handle the bulk of it, or is it just the first stage? Because I would imagine that just because GIS looks like something doesn't always mean that the soil matches.
No. And, you know, we can get to that. The soil survey is a real general approximate boundary. It's not like real high detail delineated. It's used at a kind of a larger scale of different soil types. You know, from the soils, you can get, you know, you can say, oh, there's a high frequency of ponding, high frequency of, you know, of flooding, the depth to water table, slope. I mean, those are kind of some of the things you get from the soils. But GIS is really our initial, like, pre-planning phase. I'll look at the site. I mean, a lot of times before we do proposals and start working with somebody, that's the first thing I'll look at is I'll pull in the state GIS layers, some NWI elevation, the FEMA layers, look at Google Earth Pro. You can pull in historical imagery quick, see how the site has changed. And that's really like the initial site planning, what's actually out there, and say, and usually I can do a sketch map and say, well, there's definitely wetland here. There's question mark here. That looks pretty upland here. So kind of give them areas that, well, that there's definitely wetland there. And you're never 100% sure, you know, unless you get out there. Yeah. But I've been doing it long enough. I can usually get a pretty good idea out there.
So for those that have not been around it, I want to play some definition games with you here. I'd like you to define the differences between assessment, delineation, and mitigation. Because it's one of those things too. As a marketer, I run into this all the time. Phrases that I'm really used to, others are not necessarily. I say something like SEO or something like that, or cost per click or something to somebody like that, and their eyes cross. So for those out there that have not dealt directly with those three things from somebody like yourself, I was wondering if you could give us a definition.
Sure. And I'll even add one more on there for you. So
perfect.
So the first step would be like a desktop review. So like a wetland desktop mapping review. So I'll just look at the sites, pull in some GIS layers that I have, take a look, get a quick little basically desktop assessment on the computer. Don't have to be out to the site, and just say, okay, here's wetlands here. You know, I can make polygons and map out the boundary where I think. From that, a lot of times people that are looking at buying property, they want me to go out there and just GPS approximate boundary, which often I can do in the winter or outside the growing season. So I can just go out in the field, GPS, do a quick little boundary, maybe not even flag it, and then just create a map for them. So that's more of a wetland assessment, where I just have a map. It's not a regulatory approval of boundaries, pretty cut and dry. And then the delineation is it's a full report. There's a map set. It's a lot more detailed on the report. And you really look at a high detail on finding that wetland boundary. You're looking for hydric soils, hydrophytic vegetation, and any kind of hydrology indicators. So we go out and flag it. We'll ID the flags, make our boundary, make our wetland map. And depending on whether you want a jurisdictional determination or a legal defined approved wetland delineation, you usually submit that to the regulator. So it's more state specific, but traditionally Army Corps of Engineers is always involved, and DNR or the state regulatory agencies and local like SWCDs or other government, like state specific entities. So they'll go out and do a review on the desktop. They give you a stamp and approval on it, or they may do a site visit. So it's like it's called a technical evaluation panel, a TEP panel. They may go out there and do a site visit, any adjustments, but usually they'll give you a stamp approval on it. And then that's boundaries legally good for 5 years for development purposes. So if you start doing any development past that 5 years, a lot of times you have to get them updated. And then mitigation. So if they have any More state specific, but if you're impacting any wetlands, you have to go through a mitigation wetland replacement plan. You'd be basically you're buying wetland credits to offset the impacts that you're occurring. There is certain exemptions where you're exempt from certain activities or small impacts, utility, private development. There is that's you get a little more higher detail there, but it's yeah, there is other alternatives for that, but yeah, so hope that.
And then permitting has to do with, is that just part of the process that you go through if you have wetlands, or are there any particulars that you have to get specialized permits for?
Yeah, so if people are impacting wetlands or looking at impacts, so yeah, the first step is getting a delineation there. You have your wetland boundary mapped. You know what type of wetland and where they are. And then if you're going to impact wetlands, once you have your kind of your site design, you overlay your road development, and then you have your square footage and how many acres you're impacted. From that, you kind of submit a permit application. We prepare those. You look at it like basically buying credits to offset the wetland impacts.
Gotcha. Okay. So from a high level, is it something where anybody looking to develop and anyone anywhere, or in particular people looking to develop in lower lying elevations should be looking at wetlands, or is it just anywhere all the time that people should be looking at that?
I think anywhere all the time, you should always be looking for wetlands. I mean, there's wetlands, sloped wetlands, high elevens. I mean, there's, definitely the lower you are on either the floodplain or the kind of that general landscape position. I mean, if you're at that foot slope of a hill or, the flood, you're near a creek too. There's different higher, and there's different types of wetlands too. So there's higher quality wetlands like a coniferous bog or a coniferous swamp. Those take a lot, thousands of years to develop versus a wet meadow or something of that entity. They can get developed a lot more. So there's different higher quality of wetland. And but yeah, definitely that's something you want to look at is that, especially where you're sitting on the geographic landscape.
During the process, so when you and we're looking at this from the perspective of somebody who's developing or even just a homeowner buying some land, how often do you go into a situation where there's not a sort of like a Army Corps of Engineers identified wetlands that you discover a wetlands?
Half the time, probably, at least. I mean, there's a lot of instances where, I hear from that from kind of landowners a lot. Well, it gets a little soft in the spring, it's not too bad, but then it dries out later in the year. And usually when I, they usually, people underestimate how many wetlands are actually out there. So yeah, we'll always do a site review. I'll kind of just look at my GIS sources and see what's, where I think the wetlands are. And usually there's a lot more than what most people think, or there's one little wetland in the north, but the county says I need a delineation or something. And usually there's a lot more that are out there, and people are unpleasantly surprised how many wetlands are out there.
Unpleasantly, yeah. So it could be the case where you buy a property, there's an area where it's a little soggy, but you put your road through there to get to your house, your driveway, or even where you put your house, and you could find out later that you're in a whole heap of a mess.
Yeah, I'm going through a couple projects like that. Recently, but yeah, people are oftentimes, yeah, people, if you don't do that initial site planning and you get caught per se and or didn't know it was a wetland, something of that aspect, yeah, you usually either paint. So traditionally, when you go through like a wetland placement plan or mitigation, you buy credits at like a 1-to-1 ratio. So if you're impacting 1,000 square feet of wetland, you'd buy, 1,000 square feet of wetland credits. So if you a lot of times if you do it after the fact, they call it, it's a 2-to-1 ratio. So you'd be paying twice as much versus, you know, if you didn't do that, plus whether it's either local or state, you know, fines as well. So it's definitely a lot more expensive on the back end. I mean, you're better off to do the initial site planning beforehand and find out, oh, I didn't know it was a wetland or kind of, you know. So yeah, it's definitely one of those cases.
And how expensive can this get if somebody has not identified a wetlands? Let's go with the 2-to-1 ratio. If somebody discovers after the fact and, you know, they get hammered with a fine for credits. And to specify, and this is my assumption, I'm gonna shoot in the dark here, that your wetlands credits are used to go into funding wetlands protection.
So, for example, like in Minnesota, we have wetland banks across the state in different watersheds. And usually when you're buying credits, you try to find it closer to the site, but definitely within the same watershed. So essentially they're areas that they've created more wetlands that were in historically or previously an upland area. So we've created more wetlands. So in Minnesota, we have a 91 Wetland Conservation Act that was created. And basically the goal of it is no net loss of wetlands, which we try to do. So if, like, for example, somebody put a road in and impacted 10,000 square feet of wetlands, depending on what watershed you're at and where in the state you are and supply, just like anything, supply and demand, I mean, they can set their prices higher and lower. In general, where I'm at, it's about $1 a square foot. So if you're impacting 10,000 square feet, you're putting a road in, you're paying about 10,000 for those mitigation credits. So, but again, if different parts of the country, different parts of the state, I mean, that number could be, instead of $1 a square foot, it could be easily $2-3 a square foot. So it really varies a lot by state, county, watershed, really how many banks are out there too. So you have a higher supply. I mean, there's a lot more out there. Use the price drops, but you got some areas or some cities, counties, watersheds that are, I mean, there's not a whole lot of credits over there. People are fighting for them. They can up their prices a lot more. If that makes sense.
No, it does. What we're clarifying here is that it could get very expensive. Like if you impact a high value watershed in an area where it's in high demand, you could be facing some really serious financial consequences. Is that a yep. thing or is it a one-time thing?
No, that's a one-time fee. Okay. So yeah, you buy, you go through the permitting process. And there's certain thresholds too. If you get, you know, traditionally for the Army Corps, if you get over a half an acre of impact, it'll trigger a lot more. It'll trigger a section like 401. So you get a lot more like wildlife surveys and other ecological. Rather just a general permit. That would go through an individual permit. So a lot longer review process on those. But it definitely can get very expensive on the back end if you don't do your initial planning before. That's what I always tell folks. A lot of people don't want to do that initial planning, especially you're looking at buying property or, oh, it's a, you know, tax forfeit. Oh, it's a good deal. I got a property, and then find out, oh, it's all wetland and there's nothing you can do with it.
So. And it's not just the wetland itself, right? It's the buffer zone as well, right? Is that matter
yeah.
as well?
Yeah. And that's a lot of times that's a state, like county, local ordinances, but yeah, they'll have certain setbacks from whether a drainage, if it's a DNR water course, you know, the kind of the stream status, but yeah, there's certain buffer setbacks from those and some counties too have setbacks like directly from the wetland too. So even though, well, I got my wetland delineation mapped and, but you still got to stay, let's say 40 feet from the buffer of the wetland. Even if you're not touching it, you know, there's certain setbacks in there or bluff setbacks from a larger lake or things of that matter. So, that's kind of all the whole site planning too. I mean, you get those setbacks from, you know, if you're in a small development, you know, community too, you got certain setbacks, structure setbacks, road setbacks from the neighbors, depending on, you know, if it's a larger highway too, you got to be, and then really kind of fine tune your buildable site area. And those are, yeah, those are kind of things that help clients to plan with too. So.
So curiosity question, when you've, let's say you've gone through the process, you've got your build window, 5 years, you broke ground, you're good. You're going to make deadline. 10 years from now, 15 years now from now, could the wetland boundary shift?
Yes. Yeah, the wetland boundary could definitely shift, but you know, at the, that's why they only do the delineation valve for five years. Cause, you know, you have a higher rain certain years, you know, and that's another thing we kind of look at is the antecedent precipitation. So how wet or dry it's been when we're doing the delineation. And then if you get, and that's based on like a 30 year average, excuse me. So yeah, if you have a lot of years that where it's been really, you know, really, really wet, that wetland could really increase. But yeah, when you go through the permitting process, it's at the current site conditions for that year. So, but yeah, the things, you know, things definitely change. You get new roads that come in, new developments, just the whole flexure of the water kind of, you know, things will change over the course.
So when you're talking about impact, right? If you are impacting a wetlands, that's when you incur fines. I was curious about what constitutes impact. Is it like, so you were talking about a road, and is it you built on top of the wetland, or is it that the dust from the road is settling into the wetland? And is it pretty vague, or is it there's a clear definition of like, this is an impact?
Yeah, I mean, it's traditionally it's any kind of fill, excavating, or altering of hydrology is what I tell people. You know, we don't see too much of that dust out here. I mean, you get a few of the, you know, we're a pretty big iron mine, taconite mining community. But yeah, we don't see that, like the real big dust too much out here, but yeah, really any kind of, I mean, fill, if you're, you know, putting in a road, you got class five clay, I mean, overlaid on the wetland, you know, that's an impact. If you're altering like the hydrology. So if you got, if you're, especially in agriculture areas, if you're tiling the wetland and changing the whole drainage pattern, to really dry out the wetland, any excavating, I mean, you're excavating, digging up the soil and the dirt within the wetland. Yeah, that would definitely classify as impact. And we have, like state specific in Minnesota too, we have a lot of tree debris. You got people that'll cut trees and stack up piles of them and then just let them sit there. And so that's a recently new impact for here. But oh, yeah, those are.
Is that tannins or like or is it just blockage of wetlands?
Well, if you're like harvesting timber, you know, cutting a lot of county, I mean, you can cut the trees, the shrubs, but if you chip them and have a whole chip pile or a tree pile that's, you know, X amount how many high, I mean, and they just sit there years after years, some people can use that and say, oh, I'm going to put a structure on there or something. So that's, it's kind of one of those things that's more state specific. That's why it's never just okay. The federal level, state level, and then like different local ordinances have vegetation removal, vegetation management plans, and things of that matter.
Gotcha. And you had brought up before you had put together some things for topic wise, and you had brought up GIS layers of note. So GIS layers to pay attention to. Is this for the general public, or is this just stuff that you work with?
Really both. I mean, a lot of those layers are just, I mean, public available layers, whether it's a GIS county explore, like land explorer. I mean, most of us use the Onyx. We see all the, you know, the cool layers, approximate property boundaries on there. And you know, sometimes they have a wetland layer on there, or they have the topography. But yeah, those are really some of the things that, you know, I'll look at. I mean, I you know, first thing I'll do, I'll pull up the NWI. So that's the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, has the National Wetland Inventory. It really shows like kind of the larger wetland complexes. Some states have their own wetland inventory that's pretty much mirrored or close to those. And then kind of from there, I'll go to like a soil survey. And usually the USDA has a soil survey, which really shows you a lot of attributes of the soil. You know, whether it's like is it drained good? What's the depth of the water table for each layer? Frequency of flooding, ponding, and really like the big thing I'll look at there is the it'll say a hydric soil type by percentage. So you can go from like non-hydric, predominantly non-hydric, predominantly hydric to hydric. So if it's there's five different classes on it, if it's really all showing up as hydric, there's probably some high probability of wetlands in there. Yeah, you can pull up, I mean, there's other, like, you can really look at going into detail on the imagery, the FEMA, the flooding. I think another good one is Google Earth. You know, most of us probably, you know, use that, and you can pull up the imagery, and then on there too, you can get a quick historical. Just you can on the top there, there's a scroll icon. You can really just go back and pull up a quick aerial imagery on what the conditions were like, especially in like dense forest areas of, you got a lot of hardwood trees. So you try to find, I try to find a lot of those that have a leaf off, like in a spring or winter imagery. And then from that, you can really see any kind of drainages or either saturation under the trees. I mean, those are some real good things. But yeah, those are really the main layers that I'll use. I mean, there's like state streams, a lot of counties have their own drainages, streams, rivers. But yeah, those are really, and I really think like probably the elevation and the LIDAR is probably, I would say, one of the most important, at least to me when I'm looking at sites. I mean, if you have some elevation out in the site too, you can really see where that water's gonna flow. Certain kind of small, high detail breaks, you can kind of see of where the likelihood of the wetland is going to be. Or if you see a wetland and you see kind of all those topographies kind of sloping up, you know, there's maybe a ephemeral drainage there or a stream coming through. Or, I mean, if it's real flat and you got a wetland, a lot of times those NWI boundaries are typically out a little more than that. There's usually a lot more wetlands out there. But again, if there's an NWI on there mapped, you know, that's something I'll definitely go out and look, do the delineation, do a data point on, really look, really, you know, find those areas and look at in more detail. But those are really a good start. And yeah, most of those, I mean, I can send some people some links, but yeah, most of those are, you can go on these explorers and just, you know, at least either Google those or find those pretty easy. I mean, NWI is what I tell most people, that's a, you know, that's a good, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Just Google that, and you can find that. That's a good place to start from there.
So, awesome. And you were talking about, like, you know, if somebody's purchasing land, it's best to do wetlands research. I want to throw this out there because we didn't specifically say it. Is, do you want to do it before you buy the property, or do you want to do it before you build? Because those are two separate things to somebody buying land.
Yeah, I haven't. You know, I've had it both ways. I've had, you know, and I've had kind of some in between too. Like if somebody's looking at selling and somebody else is looking at buying, they'll almost put the price on a delineation on it. Whether, you know, if it's beneficial for them to do it, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, you know, like selling a property and you're buying it. I mean, it's really goes both ways. I think majority of the time it's usually once somebody buys it, they do the delineation or, you know, get a wetland assessment, environmental assessment, of that matter. But, you know, sometimes I have people that are looking at buying a property. Well, I want to spend that, you know, a small portion before I spend all that money on a, you know, purchasing a property on the delineation, find out, you know, do your initial kind of site feasibility on it and say, wow, there's a lot more wetlands out there. You know, I think it's probably not the right property for me. Maybe I'll look at something else.
Yeah.
That's why those desktop reviews are pretty good, because those are pretty low cost, quick and easy that I can do. And I can give you a good general, you know, here's your boundary. You know, there's definitely a lot of wetlands. That whole area is probably wetlands. You got a lot of drainages coming through. And especially access too, and utilities, you know, where's the power going to go? Where's your road going to go? If you have any water or sewer out there too, where do you want your building? You know, what's your initial kind of plans of the property? That's what I ask a lot of people right away too.
So. Gotcha. Yeah. And I wanted to ask that because I mean, for me, if I'm buying land, I probably want to know beforehand. But the other side of that is, for property owners looking at selling. Like we work with a lot of property owners, and the consensus across every agent that you talk to across the country is like, if you really want to move your property and you want to make sure that you maximize what you're going to get out of it, get things established beforehand. So if you can establish like your roadways, building site possible areas, identifying wetlands, so that when you go to sell, you've got all this stuff laid out in front of you. And it does take legwork, and it takes, you know, money off the front end, right? It's not everybody's favorite thing. You can structure that into the sale of the property though, and get all that stuff identified to where it is plug and play, ready to go, turnkey. And that's going to maximize the possibility that you can sell the land. But for landowners too, it's like, if it's not there, it's buyer beware, right? Like you could buy something. So you brought up an example, right, where somebody bought something, then they can't do anything with it after they bought the land because it's all wetlands. Have you encountered things like that?
Yeah, I had one recently like that. It was, you know, somebody bought a property, bought a 40, 100% wetland. I mean, it was, you know, almost anybody could tell it was wetland. I, you know, maybe one of those where they didn't just bought it without being out there. Pretty much open bog. I mean, it was like, it's clearly wetland. And, you know, they tried doing some exemptions with it. You know, for that property in Minnesota, we have up to 10,000 square feet. You can potentially, you know, have your site plan and impact that much without going through a replacement plan in that part of the state. That exemption gets a little tough to define sometimes and tell people, but yeah, they, you know, they couldn't really get their, you know, the whole site and housing. And there was, you know, a large, it was near a bigger highway. So they had a 45 foot step back from the road. So you got to have that much more impact on there. And it just kind of fell, you know, it's one of those that just kind of fell through, but that's kind of the first one that pops in my head. And, you know, you just really can't, you really can't say that. You know, what was that, you know, and that's kind of one of the things that, you know, we look for is to how to at least minimize your impact. You know, what other kind of alternatives have you explored? I mean, was it the best site there? Are there other sites nearby that there's probably less wetlands? And, you know, the answer is probably yes. I mean, it wasn't probably the most feasible property. And yeah, I think they just kind of moved on to something else. So yeah, and it does happen too. You have other people that, you know, especially when you have properties and you have good upland sites and good areas to build at. And a lot of times people want to, well, I want that in the wetlands near the lake, and I want my house right by the lake and
right by the lake, lake.
And, you know, that's not always the case. And the most, I mean, have you done everything you can to minimize the impacts or look at other alternatives? Is there better options out there on the property? So, yeah. So sometimes those economic or, you know, aesthetic considerations aren't always, aren't always best supported in those decisions from the regulators. So,
and yeah. You brought up a new term. I feel like there should be like an alert button that pops up as people listen to this. Like, oh, have a new term. So you brought up replacement plan. What is a replacement plan, and how does that involve?
Yeah. So that's kind of what we work with for like any kind of mitigation is like, we go through a replacement plan. You know, how have you, that's kind of a lot of attachments and the permit application for purchasing the wetland credits to offset the impacts that, you know, the property owners impacting, or the client. So kind of some of the things we always try to do is say, well, have you met sequencing? So this, per the regulations, so the sequencing, you know, have you done everything you can to avoid, you know, avoid wetland impacts as much as possible. You know, and the second thing is, you know, like, what have you done to minimize the impacts? So if those impacts can't be avoided, how have you done to minimize it? So a lot of times for, let's say, road developments, if you started with a 20-foot road, you know, can you kind of narrow that road down to, let's say, a 14-foot, you know, and show your culverts, you know, keep that hydrology in line? Or if you initially have your, you know, for housing development, if you have it situated, could you reconfigure your site plan, rotate it, or pretty much anything in that aspect. And then, you know, if you can't avoid and minimize, you know, then you go through the replacement plan and replace any impacts that can't be, you know, are offsetted. So, yeah, those are kind of things that, you know, for the replacement plan. And there's, you know, we include like a draft purchase agreement on there, or, and sometimes we'll do like a state specific in kind of botanical, you know, special ecological features on there. And, you know, we'll do a proposed impact map. You know, we have alternatives map on there, kind of things of that matter. So sometimes they're getting pretty detailed depending on the project, and other times, you know, they're not too overly, but yeah, it kind of really depends on how many impacts you're having. I mean, if you're getting just kind of like local general permit where your impacts are, I mean, essentially under 10,000 square feet, but if you get those, you know, I mean, I'm packed on a couple acres. I mean, I tell people, even if you're looking at impacts, I mean, you really should be planning about a year out. But a lot of times, you know, you get those calls in late fall, and you know, you get some calls from clients, and it's kind of like, well, you know, it's probably not happening this year, and especially up in northern Minnesota here, we our growing season. So the delineation, that's another thing too, is delineations need to be completed during the growing season. So,
okay.
That's per the 87 Army Corps delineation manual. So, yeah, up here, I mean, our, you know, some years it's middle of May before we can start delineations, and then we're done, you know, early October. But, yeah, you know, and then other parts of the country, you know, down south, we can do them definitely a lot longer, almost, you know, 10 months out of the year. So,
what's the worst situation that you've encountered? For, we'll say, for the landowner, not necessarily for yourself, because I'm sure that you get complications during the course of any project. What's the worst thing that you've come up on as far as working with a client?
Like impacts, or like
nightmare scenario for the client?
You know, there's sometimes where somebody put a development in, and you know, right through what we call in Minnesota, like a type H. So it's like a really like an open bog, coniferous bog. They're the most protected. So a lot of our impacts for the exemptions, you know, they're a lot less. But yeah, some of those we've had, there's a couple that stand out, but yeah, there's kind of one, and it's just like right through the bog. Oh, I didn't know it was wetland. And, you know, they had all their garage started and everything all going, and you know, probably a neighbor or somebody, you know, complained, and there's a complaint to the regulators. And, you know, after, you know, $30,000, $50,000 later, I have to buy credits or I have to restore it. But even restoring the whole, let's say, a road or impact is, I mean, going to cost quite a bit as well. So, you know, where's that line of either have like a restoration order? So a lot of times the DNR will issue like a restoration order. So they usually have to restore it, or go through a mitigation replacement plan. But yeah, there's a couple that kind of stand out, but yeah, they're
talking a good chunk of change when something happens. What are some of the, what's, you know, best case scenario where you are able to identify, like, just what, you know, because you work with a lot of projects, what are the kind of ideal scenarios where you can help somebody out?
Yes, like I think probably the ideal scenario is we have a property, there's wetlands on there, but there's clearly like upland areas or buildable areas, let's say, in the back. So they have to either cross that wetland, or let's say the wetland's there, rather than putting the road straight through, maybe they can push their road a little bit more to the east, avoid the wetland, maybe have a longer driveway, but they'd avoid the wetland. And then, I don't even have to go through the, I don't even have to go through any mitigation. You just go out and do a pretty quick, dry and easy, delineation. And a lot of times we'll call it like a level one delineation. So I call that like a desktop review, where I'll just look at that, like I was talking about before, where a level two is the kind of the field aspect and a regulatory review. So a lot of times usually level one, level two, but yeah, I think if, you know, you can go out there and say, well, I found wetlands, but they can clearly avoid them, no impacts at all, and they have a buildable site. good area for the septic, utilities, all right there, then kind of it's a win-win. And it's like, well, that looks like a good property. I think I'll purchase that. Yeah, it's definitely, you know, and that's what's satisfying for me too, is I can, you know, help clients and see those good projects go through, and versus, you know, you get some of those where it's, oh, it's all wetland. And it's like, ah, I feel bad. And, you know, they're after the fact, they impact it. And, you know, you try to do as much as you can, but, you know, at the same time, it's, you're working for the client, but, you know, you're working for the wetlands too. So you're kind of in that happy medium between the two. So
we've established a few things here, right? Like, we've established that, one, if you're looking at buying a property, you should do a wetland study. If you're looking at selling a property, a wetland study is going to help you get established to go to sale faster and with less hassle. That wetlands can shift, so you want to do it whether you had something done 20 years ago or not. You're still going to want to have that done. That there are ways to solve it if there are wetlands, but there are cases where you can't. So that's why it's good to talk to somebody like you. You also established that if there are wetlands, somebody like you can help somebody formulate a plan to either A, do mitigation, meaning you're going to pay, or B, reroute your setup, reroute your development to where you're rerouting roads, you're rerouting building locations to where you're not paying those fines. So overall, you're a friend to anybody looking to buy or sell land. And it's something that everybody buying or selling land should work with, because it doesn't matter what elevation you're at. Wetlands can be high or low.
Yeah, wetlands are, yeah, no, I hit it spot on there. I mean, wetlands are, you know, all over the country, high, low, sloped wetlands, agricultural wetlands, forested, floodplain. I mean, pretty much you name it. I'm, you know, last time I checked, I don't know if there's a county in the country that, you know, didn't have any wetlands. Yeah.
I want to give you an opportunity for your sales spiel, man. Like hit us with where do you work with people? Where's your specialty areas? And you know, what do you primarily, do you have a niche area that you work with more than others?
Yeah. I mean, if people are looking at properties, you know, whether you're just bought one or initially, well, there's a couple properties out there, you know, I'm not sure what's out there, you know, even just reach out and I can give you a quick little, kind of my few cents of what I think of the property, you know, where they'll see issues. Yeah, definitely my specialty is delineations. That's the primary focus, and that's really what kind of kicks things off. And really from that, you can kind of, once you have your delineation, your wetlands regulatory mark, really from that you can work on the site development, what kind of, you know, where your buildable, usable land is, and then look at any kind of boundary setbacks or other issues, septic, utilities, really from that, which I work on that stuff, you know, as well. So, I mean, per se, I'm kind of in that mix between a wetland scientist, engineer, you know, trying to find a legal jargon for developments and pretty much everything. But, yeah, I mean, if you need like a level one delineation on the desktop, or like a level two in field, I mean, yeah, we work with projects kind of really all over the country. So,
I think that is, yeah, pretty much anywhere, anyhow, anytime you can work with them. Awesome, man. That is a lot of really good information for landowners. I really appreciate it. Then make sure to check out CK Wetlands. I will have your link in the show notes, and you know, make sure that if people want to get a hold of you, that they can. Again, Kurt Kleist with CK Wetlands. Really appreciate your time, man.
Okay, well, thank you very much for having me, and I really appreciate it. So it's always good to talk about wetlands and developments. So thank you very much.
Agreed, man. Thank you.
This concludes episode number 86 for the National Land Realty Podcast with Kurt Kleist of CK Wetlands, discussing wetlands assessment and mitigation. You can learn more about land ownership and the buying and selling of land at nationalland.com.